Happy Monday, everybody. Thank you so much, as always, for downloading or streaming the Be Our Guest podcast. So glad you're here for some fun Disney talk to kick off another new work week. We have Katie standing by on the line to discuss a recent Walt Disney World vacation, as well as some Sherman Brothers talk. That's right. We're going to get into a little Disney history with trip reports today. It's going to be a lot of fun. But first, a quick word from our sponsors, and that includes our friends over at touringplans.com. Save time and money on your next Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Universal vacation with our friends over at touringplans.com, the official website for the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World. They have the trip planning tools to show you the least crowded park to visit every day, customized touring plans for visiting Disney's best rides, honest restaurant reviews, how to save on Disney tickets, the best hotel rooms to ask for with pictures, and so much more. For the price of a very Instagrammable snack down at Walt Disney World, you're getting 365 days of great information. Check them out. Tell Len we said hello over at touringplans.com. Thanks again to everybody who continues to use our Amazon affiliate link to support the Be Our Guest podcast. It's the simplest way to show your love for the show. You're going to get all your Prime benefits, cost you nothing extra, and every purchase does help pay for some of the bandwidth and hosting for the show, and we appreciate that so very much. So anytime you purchase anything on Amazon, please click through our link at beourguestpodcast.com/Amazon.
Ready to take a trip to the world? You found the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. This is where your memories come front and center on our podcast stage.
Welcome to episode 1487 of the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rallman, from BeOurGuestPodcast.com, which is newly redesigned, and it looks great on mobile devices. So if you want to take the show with you, that is a great way to do that. Bookmark it on your phone there, put it on your homepage, and you got all the shows right there at one click, and you can listen away. Also, I'm one of the senior agents over at the Magic for Less Travel, and we are here with a great Disney podcast to get this week started the right way. Whether you're listening down in Australia, maybe over in Europe, or here in the States, we appreciate you tuning in for some fun Disney talk to kick off another work week. And we've got a twofer for you today. We're going to talk some Sherman Brothers and music down at the parks at Walt Disney World, as well as a quick trip report. So we are going to have a good time. Joining me today to talk all this fun Disney stuff, we have Katie out in Maryland. Katie, how are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Glad to have you on the show. And we've got so much to talk about today. I know that our fans are excited for this because we love trip reports on Monday, but we also love the stuff that makes the magic down at Walt Disney World. So let's kick off with the book that you wrote. And anytime I bring an author on the show, I'm always in awe because I remember, you know, the closest I ever got to writing a book was my thesis in college for a master's degree. And that almost killed me because I was working at Space Camp at the same time and putting that together. And I, you know, everybody told me, you're a great writer. You should write a book. No way. I don't think I have the talent. And you put one together. And we're going to talk about the Sherman Brothers today. So tell us the name of the book and kind of what got it rolling for you.
Well, the name of the book is Walt Disney's Melody Makers. And it's obviously a biography of the Sherman Brothers. And the way that it really got started was I actually met Richard Sherman back in 2011 at the D23. He was doing a panel, I believe it was on It's a Small World, and, you know, being a huge fan of Disney World, that was definitely one of the panels I had to check out. And just hearing him talk about creating the music for such attractions, you know, that I grew up on and that I had such happy memories with, it was just a whole different ballgame hearing it, you know, from a personal perspective, from the person who created the music. And, you know, I just listening to his story, he was so charismatic and passionate about the Disney company. And it was just something that really struck my interest. So I thought, you know what, these people sound really interesting. So I looked more into them. I had known, you know, their more popular songs from Mary Poppins and whatnot. But the more I got into it, I realized how many songs they really did write for the Disney company. And you know, it just kind of snowballed into this idea to write a book. And that's just kind of how the idea was born.
That's so cool. And, you know, getting to meet Richard Sherman, you know, I think I would be in awe just for the fact that, you know, I would think about, okay, this gentleman spent intimate times with Walt Disney himself. You know, I mean, they really were there creating the magic from, day one. You know, he was him and his brother, the boys, you know, and, you know, you got it. You guys got it. That's it. You know, he, you know, Walt would tell him, I mean, how cool was that knowing that you're not, you're like 1 degree separated from Walt Disney himself at that point?
As a big Disney fan, it was definitely a huge moment for me. And I agree. It was one of those things, you know, where I obviously was never born at the time Walt Disney was alive. But it kind of brought a little bit of that nostalgic feeling back. And it was definitely just one of those awe-inspiring moments where you're just like, wow, this person is amazing. And they were a huge spoke in the wheel of the Walt Disney Company during those golden years. And, you know, it just the history of the Walt Disney Company, I feel like they were really part of the foundation of it, because without the music, I feel a lot of the attractions and movies just wouldn't have been the same.
Totally agree. And I think, you know, I'm just back from Walt Disney World just a few days ago as we record this show. And for folks that listen to our podcast, obviously, you've probably traveled to the Disney destinations many, many times. And I think the one thing that can immediately take us back to a memory or, you know, just a certain trip or a certain time in our lives are the songs, you know, like a Carousel of Progress song, you know, Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow or It's a Small World. And I think it takes us back to, like, right now I can see Mallory as a little bitty kid getting in one of the boats on It's a Small World every time I hear that song. And I'm sure that's true of all of our listeners. So is that one of the reasons why you made this connection to the Sherman Brothers?
Oh, definitely. You know, as a mother myself, you know, seeing my kids grow up with the same songs that I grew up on, it's kind of one of those things where their songs are timeless. You know, they transition through the years, and a lot of songs, you know, my kids listen to that I listen to, and they're like, oh, these are terrible, get these off. But not the Sherman Brothers songs. They really just transition through, and it's really a special thing to get to experience it through the different generations. You know, when my parents took us as kids, they were songs that I remember as a child, and then getting to experience them again with my own children, it just takes it to like a whole new level of memories. And, you know, it just brought me back to so many good memories of being at the parks, you know, through my childhood and my kids. And, you know, one of our favorites is the Tiki Room. So that I just love reading all about the stories that how they created the different songs and just kind of piecing it together. Their different, contributions to, the different attractions.
Well, too, and the funny thing is that, you know, as I think about the songs, most of them are, you know, very optimistic and upbeat. And, you know, they give you that earworm that you, especially as a Disney travel agent, we always listened to the Hold music, you know, for hours a day. And it's usually Sherman Brothers music that's on the Hold music because it's theme park music. But, you know, it sticks with you. But then you have, you know, a song like Feed the Birds, which I've only seen Mary Poppins one time in my life. I enjoyed it, but I'm just not a big movie person. But, you know, that's a powerful song with a powerful message. It's not it's a great big beautiful tomorrow, but it's, you know, it shows the range of their music and how it can, you know, move your emotions both, you know, with the upbeat pump, you know, just, you know, Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, very optimistic view, but also, you know, hey, let's reflect on things. I think they had a wide range.
Oh, they definitely did. And I think Feed the Birds definitely was one where they let their emotion show a little more. It was actually Walt Disney's favorite song of any of the songs that they ever wrote. And it was something that really resonated with him, you know, just the simple things in life can mean the most. And he would invite them down to his office on Friday nights and he would just say, play it. And they would play it. And he would just kind of, you know, reflect on life and look out the window. And he even once told them, this is what it's all about. You know, it's just the simple things in life, the little things that matter the most. So I think that they definitely have a wide range because, like you said, It's a Small World is probably the most commonly known song of all time, probably in the world. You know, I don't think I've met one person who hasn't heard that song. And it's definitely the one that gets in your head the most. But yeah, Feed the Birds, it definitely shows that they can go from the fun, you know, kid side to the more adult emotional side that kind of plays to all ages.
So what kind of surprised you when you were doing your research for the book or, you know, a story or something that you learned that, you know, maybe even the fan who's at D23 or the fan who is subscribed to 28 Disney podcasts might not know today or something you want to share with them?
Well, there was a lot that I actually didn't know about them. You know, they actually came from several generations of musicians, which I thought was pretty neat. Their dad obviously was Al Sherman and he was a Tin Pan Alley musician, and their grandfather was a musician over in Europe, and he worked with orchestras, and you know, they really just, it was in their blood. So I think that was kind of a unique thing. And I just thought it was really neat that they first, when they started out doing music, they kind of figured this isn't going to work, and they went their own separate ways and kind of got, you know, day jobs, you know, usual 9-to-5 jobs. And it was actually their dad who pushed them to work together and made a bet with them that a kid wouldn't pay, you know, their lunch money to listen to one of their songs. So being the competitive people that they were, they took him up on that bet. And, you know, that's kind of how their career took off. And it was kind of funny in the research, because it kind of seemed like maybe the dad didn't want them at first to be musicians because of the struggles he had, but then he was kind of the one who pushed them into it. So I think he saw the potential that they had and knew that they really had something special.
What I find too, that's very interesting about their music, and that's, you know, that's, it's cool to hear background of how people, because, you know, Walt, one of his famous quotes that you hear in, you know, One Man's Dream, you got the movie there at the end, everybody needs kind of a good failure, you know, to kick in the teeth when you're young, to get moving and chase those dreams down. And I think that, you know, almost every Disney story I hear of Imagineers and folks that created the magic, you know, they had that struggle, they had that valley before they had the, you know, the summit or the peak and the success. And I think that's really what, you know, makes people, you know, better folks. You know, you appreciate the success later on. And I think it keeps you hungry down the line. And it seemed like, you know, the Sherman Brothers, they had hit after hit after hit. And it seemed to me, and again, I haven't done the research that you've done, but it seemed that they stayed hungry, you know, because they kept writing stuff that was high quality. It wasn't like they wrote a few things and then, you know, kind of, you know, went down in a lull. Like, they just kept the hit. As Casey Kasem would have said, the hits just kept on coming for them.
Right. And I think that's what really makes them relatable, is that they did have so many failures. It was actually funny, the story of how they met Walt. They didn't actually realize they were going to perform for him. They thought they were just going on an interview. And I can't even imagine, you know, the stress that would have come on me if I went into an interview, you know, thinking, okay, I'm just going to do this for some executives. And then here they tell you, you're going to be performing for Walt Disney, and the intimidation of seeing his Oscars in the waiting room. And I just think, you know, they did a tremendous job of blowing that interview out of the water, that they went in there. And the one thing they were told by Jimmy Johnson was, don't call him Mr. Disney, you know, just stick to Walt. He doesn't like formalities. And of course, within 10 seconds, they called him Mr. Disney. So they kind of thought they blew the interview. And then, you know, they started singing their strumming song during the interview that they had wrote for the Horse Masters, which is what they were called in for. And Walt was kind of describing a different movie. So then they panicked, thinking, oh, great, did we write the wrong thing? You know, it was kind of a disaster of an interview, but they made such an impression that, you know, he called them back and they ended up doing the music for both projects. So I think it's just, their story is so relatable to so many people. And it's just one of those ones that brings you a lot of hope. And, you know, I just think it's one of those Cinderella type stories that everybody loves.
They are, you know, when I think about this, you know, I think about the Sherman Brothers as being very relatable, you know, because they don't seem superhuman. They don't seem unapproachable. It seems like you could truly have back, you know, in the time of, you know, the Disney heyday, you know, sit down with them and they were kind of every man, yet they were exceptionally talented and visionary in how they took the messages of an attraction or a movie and tied it into the emotions, because I think that's what it is. I mean, a good song, you know, sticks in your heart forever. And I mean, just, you know, what I try to think about is, if I went to Walt Disney World and took away the Sherman Brothers music or took away the scores of the things I enjoy, you know, I love Illuminations. It's going away very soon. But as I've taken an inventory of it, and I know it's going away in a couple months, I'm telling myself I'll always have the score. I'll always have the music. So I'll always have those emotions. When I play the song, I can go back to that time and place. And I think that's what's true of the Sherman Brothers, is that their legacy and their music will live on. And it's so important to so many people that it's really changed lives.
It really has. And the thing that makes their music amazing too is they weren't, you know, they didn't just write music. They were storytellers. And I think that's why they had such a personal level with Walt that was probably closer than any other employee. I think that he just got them, you know, he would give them an idea and they would just kind of run with his idea and create a story around it. Like when they did the Tiki Room, for example, he brought them down to a soundstage and there was just a bunch of birds in there. And they just thought, wow, this is chaos. Like, what the heck is this? And he said, that's what you're going to do. You're going to tell the story. And, you know, looking at that attraction now after writing this book, I think, wow, this is just a bunch of chaos when you look at it. But with the music, it brings the whole show to life. And, you know, the Carousel of Progress, too. I really think the whole thing that transitions the show is the music. You know, each scene kind of transitions with The Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. And they really did. They really did bring everything that Walt had as ideas to life with their music.
I cherish it. I mean, it is. I mean, because the thing is, none of us get to the Disney destinations as much as we would like. You know, I think that we're all, you know, have those long, dry spells where we're on message boards, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos and so forth to connect to Walt Disney World or Disneyland or what have you. But the one thing, you know, I'm sure you do it while you're writing your books or while you're, you know, working with the family at home. I do it as I'm working with my guests at the Magic for Less. Is that I'll put on some great theme park music, and 90% of the time it's something from the Sherman Brothers, and I'm extremely moved by everything I hear. And the thing I like is that you can find different versions of their songs, and it moves you and it's emotional. So I appreciate all they've done. I bet it was just a really cool thing putting this all together.
Yeah, I always listen to the music. You know, we always watch the ride-throughs on YouTube, or we have the soundtracks on in the car. And my kids have kind of grown up on that, so they've just kind of gotten used to when they're around mom, they're going to be listening to Disney at some capacity. So it's definitely brings you back to home. You know, a lot of us think that, you know, going to the parks is like a second home. And you're right, when you have that stretch, it's kind of like, you get homesick and you just want to go. And it really does. It just brings a piece of it home with you. And it's just a great thing to be able to do that.
Love it. All right, well, let's shift gears here a little bit. Now I want to hear a little bit about your background. You know, what has you writing a book about the music of the Disney destinations, about the Sherman Brothers, and coming on a Disney podcast? You know, what's your backstory with the Disney destinations yourself?
Well, I have been going to Walt Disney World since I was a baby. It was one of our favorite family destinations. We went there all the time. And, you know, just growing up, those were some of the happier memories. I just remember going there as a family and just experiencing the magic together. And it was just something I grew up with. And I got the Disney bug, I think, more than anyone in my family. And I just became engulfed with the music and the movies and just everything that's Disney. And I've just continued on the tradition with my own kids. And, you know, there's just something magical about everything in the Walt Disney Company that comes out. It just takes you to a whole nother place. And I just love being able to leave reality for a while and just kind of go off into fantasy land.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, that's exactly why I love going down there. You know, I love going when, you know, Paige was, she's now graduated from Mizzou. So, you know, it's like, I remember going with her when she was six. And now, you know, Mallory was a baby and now she's 11, and it was always fun. You know, it's the escape of, you know, Mallory goes to cheerleading three nights a week, but when we go to Walt Disney World for that week or so, you know, it's all about the family. We don't have to run to cheerleading or go to school or, you know, do work or any of the requirements of life. We get to just, you know, we always talk about it. For the next 7 days, the only thing we have on the agenda is to have fun as a family. And Walt Disney World gives us that opportunity. So I think especially as parents, and I know we all have our stages of life where it's just as fun, but as parents, it's so nice to be able to disconnect from the obligations of daily life to enjoy our kids. I think you said that very well.
Yeah, and it's amazing how every time I go to Disney World, it's almost like a new trip because there's always something new to see, something new to experience, and no two trips are ever the same. And I like that because it's like every stage of life too. It just changes. It's, you know, the childhood, it's the magic of everything. And then as you get older, it's experiencing that through the eyes of your own child, and just seeing them experience it for the first time is just, it's just incredible.
So now you're off a really long, lengthy trip back in February. So give us a little background on that. When did you guys, where'd you guys stay, and what were some of the highlights of that trip?
Well, we stayed at Pop Century. It was our first time we had ever stayed there. And we usually stay at the Art of Animation, and we just decided to switch it up. So we stayed at the Pop Century. And, you know, it had been too long since we had been home. It had been almost 3 years. So I just decided we're going to go. We're going to go for a long time. We're just going to enjoy it. We're just going to do it. So it was great. We got to go for almost 2 weeks, and we did the Magic Kingdom, I think, more days in that trip than I've ever done in any other trip. So that was great because it was a lot more relaxing. We weren't rushing from ride to ride, trying to cram everything into like 2 days. And it was great because two older kids are now able to kind of enjoy it a little more as, you know, older children and enjoy the bigger rides. And we had a one-year-old with us, so that was kind of a new experience. I was going from riding the thrill rides to back to the kiddie rides again. Not that I didn't ride the kiddie rides. I mean, I will ride those to the day I die, but, you know, getting to experience it with the young children again. So it was kind of I think that was the first trip I had been on where I went from all little kids to all big kids to having both. So it was a different balance, but it was definitely a much needed trip.
So I think the one thing all of us Disney fans look forward to, or, you know, hope for someday, is for that really long trip, you know, more than a week, you know, because time just speeds up when you're at Walt Disney World. I've just noticed that, you know, like a week at Walt Disney World goes by in like a day, real time, you know, that's what I always think. I'm like, you know, how is it already the second to last day of my trip? It feels like we just got on Magical Express to come to the resort. So, you know, walk us through that. What was different when you had that much time? Because it's a luxury. But how did things change when you have that much time to do everything you want to do? I'd imagine you got most of it done.
We did. This was the first trip that we ever went on that we got to see all of the characters they wanted to see. They wanted to go hunt down those rare characters. So we were bringing up the, you know, My Disney Experience, looking for those rare characters. And usually we're, like I said, so rushed going from ride to ride to ride. We don't have time to, you know, take the time to go to the smaller activities such as seeing all of the characters. And, you know, we're not annual pass holders. I would love to be, but we are not. So we don't have the luxury of going there all the time. So when we go, we really have to cram in everything they want to do. And going for that length of time, like you said, I swear I blinked and we were home. And I kind of thought, well, where did the week go? You know, the 2 weeks, what happened to it? What did we do? And it's like looking back at the pictures, it almost feels, I don't know, it almost feels like I wasn't there to a point. But it was nice to be able to go enjoy Disney Springs and, you know, go to the different dining experiences. And like I said, just take in the little things, the different shops in the parks and things that usually we would just kind of run past on the way to Splash Mountain or something, trying to hit a fast pass. So it was nice to take it down to a slower pace for once.
So you mentioned you guys usually stay at Art of Animation, but you switched over to Pop. So compare the two. What did you think? Would you, if you had to go again, you know, say tomorrow and you had the choice between the two resorts, would you go back to Art or would you stick with Pop?
I would probably go back to the Art of Animation. We liked Pop Century. It just, somehow the big characters having kids, they just love the Art of Animation. That's always my kids' go-to hotel. So I usually just book that one and the price isn't bad. So I'm okay with that. But, you know, usually the first thing they say is, are we staying at the Art of Animation? I'm like, I guess if that's where you want to stay. But I think it was just, you know, the big characters. It's kind of bringing you into the Disney movies when you go there. And we ended up walking over the bridge to the Art of Animation most of the times anyways. So we kind of were there anyways, I guess. But yeah, they liked the Nemo playground. My one-year-old loved that. So we didn't really ever get out of there when we were over there. So there's just a lot of unique things over there. But both are, you know, really nice hotels. I don't think you can go wrong with any Disney hotel, really.
No, I agree, too. And I think it's, you know, comfort level that our family grew up going to Pop Century, because as we started really going down once a year every summer, Pop Century was a brand new resort. You know, it was like the new value. And, you know, Art of Animation was just the abandoned back half of Pop Century back then. And, you know, we just have so many memories when we look at, I show Mallory the pictures of, you know, Paige and I. And Paige is way younger than Mallory is now. And she's just blown away by, you know, that's Paige and you're in the bowling pin pool, or, you know, you're in the computer pool and you're doing this and that, you know, you're in front of the big Mickey phone. And I'm like, yeah, you know, we did the same things we're doing now. And it's, I think it's a comfort level, you know, because like you've said in the podcast already today, and I think we all say it, you know, we consider going down to Walt Disney World home, and it's that connection to what we're comfortable with and what we really look forward to, because we want to kind of hold on to those memories from the past when we make new memories on the next trip too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I look back at the different pictures and I love comparing how big the family has grown, you know, going from one child there to three, and just seeing, you know, even the newest one going down the Nemo slide, going back and looking at my daughter doing that. And it's fun to go back down memory lane and just seeing how, you know, things almost appear frozen in time, but they're kind of all new at the same time, and just making new memories. It's just one of my favorite things to do. And, you know, I wish I could go back more.
Oh, me too. Actually, Paige and I recreated a picture. She must have been seven. I'm saying one of the times we stayed at Pop Century, we got a picture taken in front of one of the 80s buildings at Pop Century. And I think it was last year we were at Pop Century again, you know, and she was 21 and we pulled up the picture and we stood like she had some weird like she was kind of slouching or something. So we got her to stand exactly the same. I stood the same. And it's like, you know, same picture, same spot 10 years later. It was kind of fun. So even when they get older, they'll oblige you once in a while. Not very often. It was a neat reminder of the past. So let me ask you this. So that was a long trip. So what do you remember? Like, what were some of the highlights? Was it, you mentioned you met some unique characters. Was it a first experience for one of the kids? What, you know, what sticks with you, you know, a few months later?
I think because it was my youngest daughter's first trip, I think that really stuck out to me because she was just about to be two, so I was kind of worried, thinking, oh, great, is she going to like rides? Is she going to be scared of these characters? What is going to happen? And it was funny because she loves Mickey Mouse and Dumbo, and I just thought, okay, well, this will be good. She likes these characters. Well, she didn't like the costume characters very much. She would hide when they came, and then she'd laugh when we left. So the pictures were all kind of her hiding, but she enjoyed it afterwards, after they were out of sight. But she loved the rides. You know, if I put on like the Tiki Room or It's a Small World, she remembers them even, you know, now. And she just starts dancing and getting really excited. So it's kind of fun for me as a mom who loves Disney to see that my kids take that with them and that they cherish it as much as I do. And it's great seeing my oldest one, who's 14, and the youngest one, loving it, you know, on the same level, because so many people think Disney is just for kids, and it's not. It's for everybody, and it really just brings out the kid in everybody, and I love that no matter what age you are, you can appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree with you there 100%, you know, because I see that, you know, my kids are 11 years apart, so we had, you know, Mallory going at, you know, she was 6 months old, and Paige was 11, and they still both had a good time. I mean, Mallory doesn't remember much from that trip, but, you know, she got older. We went down when she was 2, 3, like you said. She was, you know, you could see her just excitement because we have the music on here all the time as well. And it was familiar, but she got to see all the visuals of, like you said, the tiki birds, or to hear the dog bark and the Carousel of Progress, you know, and all the scenes, you know, that was something fun for her. And as we've grown up, it's just been something that we've really loved. Now, you said, you know, you have a 14-year-old and you have the baby. So what? I would imagine that's a really cool dynamic, because I'm sure the 14-year-old is very excited to kind of himself pass on some tips and some advice to the little one and really help that experience, you know, because I think it's really fun for the older siblings to show the younger siblings, hey, you know, this is how we do this kind of stuff.
Right. It is. I actually have a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old. So those two, you know, they've really grown up together in Disney. So the new one is kind of the odd man out at times, and they really just took her and just, you know, showed her everything, like, oh, then you're going to love this. And it's funny because she's one, so she has no idea what the heck is going on. But just them having the, you know, the glow in their eyes and the awe, even at their ages, and taking her and experiencing it with her, I think it was special for them also that they got to see her, you know, on her first time, because obviously they don't remember their first times because they were, you know, only a couple months old when I had taken each of them. And I don't think they can probably remember their first couple trips, but I think it's kind of neat for them as older siblings to get to experience that first Disney magic, because I don't think so many siblings get to do that because they're so close in age. So the age gap to me was kind of nice because they got to see, you know, the magic through her eyes. Yeah. And I think it brought out a little bit extra magic for them as well.
It's cool. And the pictures are amazing. You know, that's the thing is, people say, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't take a baby. They're never going to remember it. And they're not, you know, you're exactly right. But you know what? I remember it and I have pictures. And you know what? I'll tell you what, people always ask me, you know, what is it? Can you take a 6-month-old? And I tell them, yes. And they're free and they're a lot easier to manage than when they're 3 years old and have a mind of their own. And you're trying to, you know, keep them from pulling every plush off the shelf and, you know, take off running and crying every time you say no. I mean, a 6-month-old is way easier than a 3-year-old. I'm just telling you, I've learned that. And I'm sure you've had that experience too.
Oh yeah. My oldest daughter, we took her when she was 3 months old. And I think that was one of the greatest trips we've ever had because it was peaceful. And we had so many memories with the pictures, and like you said, it's nothing she'll ever remember, but I will always look back on it and be like, oh, look how little you were with Mickey and look how little you were with Ariel. And, you know, it's things that I cherish as a mom. And I think as they get older, they'll appreciate all the memories that they created throughout the years. Like you said, the pictures just are priceless.
Yes. All right. So for the 14 and 11 year old, what are some of their favorite things? And is there something that, you know, you could push out there for our listeners that maybe you're taking kids of that age and they don't have the experience that you have that might help them plan a better vacation? Because I think, you know, that kind of tween, you know, early teen, that's a weird age. You know, they're trying to find themselves. And a lot of times, you know, they kind of think, not all kids, and especially probably not kids in our audience, but some kids think Disney, you know, they're too cool for school for Disney. What do you find that really appeals to that age when you go down?
Well, definitely the thrill rides. They like the Tower of Terror and the Rock and Roller Coaster and Expedition Everest. We get drug on those over and over again. You know, there's plenty of thrill rides. There's so much for kids that age to do. And I think it's also different now because they are older that they like to try a lot of the different foods. My daughter tried, I don't remember what it was called. It was this pineapple crepe thing in Pandora at Animal Kingdom. And she just kind of, her taste buds have, you know, developed as a teenager. And she just wanted to try all these unique foods that I, you know, usually would never buy because usually I'm buying chicken nuggets and ice cream.
<Same here. laughs>
So it was something different for me that I was buying these crazy things because I'm so used to buying kid food. And it was neat because it was the first time I really got to experience a lot of these things. So I think that was something different too. And they took in the shopping more, which, you know, as a woman, that was great for me too. I mean, not my pocketbook, but it was great to go in and be able to take that side in as well. And like I said, there's so many thrill rides, so many things to experience and attractions and shows. And they still love going on Winnie the Pooh and It's a Small World because it brings back those childhood memories for them, I think, too. And they're just classics. They're just things you have to do. The Haunted Mansion. You know, there's so much for teenagers, I think, that a lot of people think it is just for kids. But I think it's just the memories of going with your family, too. I think they just genuinely like going. Like you said, some teenagers is kind of like, oh, it's just for kids. But somehow when we get to Disney, all of that just disappears, the teenage attitudes and everything. And they just enjoy the time together.
Yeah, we won't allow that non-Disney stuff in this house. That's what we do. You know, it is one of those things that I think, you know, they might, around their friends back home, you know, they might not sound as excited as, you know, at least Mallory, you know, sometimes she doesn't, you know, she's not over the moon that we're going to Walt Disney World. It kind of hurts me at first. But then when we get there, she drops it. She has a good time. We have a blast. And so I just know it's that awkward, you know, 11-year-old trying to be 22 like her sister and all that good stuff that parents have to deal with. So let me ask you one other thing, too, because you mentioned they're 14 and 11. And this is kind of one of those things that, you know, with my 11-year-old, it's a struggle for me because I think as they get to be early teens that you may give them a little bit more freedom down at Walt Disney World. And, you know, Mallory knows the magic. She knows the Walt Disney World parks like the back of her hand. And we go down with large groups a lot of times. She has a good friend, Emily, who's also grown up in the Disney parks and knows them just as well as probably her hometown in Michigan. And so sometimes when we're in Casey's getting a hot dog, for example, we might allow them with the Magic Band to go over to Starbucks and get a refresher. And I think they get a kick out of that if they travel in like groups of two or three, even though they're just really across the street in the Magic Kingdom. But I think that's one of the things that, you know, they enjoy because I don't know that I trust them to wander our town here in St. Louis. I would never allow that, but I will allow them to go across the street in the Magic Kingdom. So is that something that you find that you're exploring or maybe in the future might, you know, be a good venue for your kids to kind of get a little bit more freedom?
Yes. You know, I'm one of the same kind of parents like, oh, you can't go venture in town. You don't know who's going to be up there, and overly protective of everything. They probably think I'm crazy half the time, but I'm like, you will learn one day when you have kids. This is what you do. But we went in April again, just for 4 days. It was a long weekend. My daughter had a dance competition there and performed at Disney Springs. And that was the first trip that I let them go on an attraction alone because I went alone with the baby and the two older kids. So I couldn't go on a lot of the rides with the baby. So it was the first time, you know, I would take her on Winnie the Pooh and let them go on the Haunted Mansion. So I think they kind of liked that they kind of had the freedom to kind of experience the park by themselves without, you know, helicopter mom on them at all times. So I think they really enjoyed that aspect of getting to experience it for themselves. And of course, I was right there at the exit when they got off, but for those few seconds, they thought they were out on their own. So I think that was something they really enjoyed.
Well, same too. And I think it's a good, you know, not everything has to be educational, but I think it is a great place to kind of teach some responsibility because it's a very controlled environment. And as long as your kids are comfortable and they've been there many, many times and can find their way from one place in the park to the next. And you're not talking about maybe Carousel of Progress to Big Thunder, you know, with a large, chunk of land, but maybe, you know, within a certain land, one attraction to the next. And especially with things like Find My, you know, Friends on it, I know where Mallory, at least I know where her phone is at all times. I don't know if she's always with, she should be, but it's one of those things that I think that as they get a little older, you have to give them an opportunity to show the responsibility. And I like doing that in little doses because I think it really makes them happy. Like when Mallory and Emily get to cut loose for like 20 minutes and go grab, like I said, Starbucks or get an ice cream off a cart or something like that, you know, it really makes them feel special. And it, you know, I'm watching remotely at all times, but I think that's one of those great opportunities to, you know, show your kids that you trust them.
Right. And I think that's so important. And you know, it's hard to not be there every second to see, you know, the expressions on their faces and experience it. But it is nice to step back, you know, and kind of take that in and watch them be able to experience it themselves and have a little bit of that independence. And like you said, my kids could walk that park in their sleep. They know it so well. So it's something I feel comfortable with. It's an environment I feel comfortable with. And I know that they're safe there. And, you know, I'm not too far away from them. So it's nice to be able to see them kind of have that, you know, wow, we're buying our own something from the gift shop or like you said, an ice cream from the cart and seeing them get in the line by themselves. They kind of have that smile on their face like, wow, we've gained a little bit of independence. And that's kind of nice to see, too.
Yeah, I'd much rather them do it at the Magic Kingdom than in St. Louis, Missouri. Just saying, it's not quite as friendly here all the time. So, yeah, I like that better. Now, before we get out of here, we do have to talk a little food because you guys were down there for quite a long time. And you mentioned that your daughter kind of explored some new things. What are some of your favorite restaurants or dining experiences down at Walt Disney World?
Well, we are notoriously quick service people. You know, like I said, usually we go for such a short amount of time that we're cramming everything in. So we usually just grab something quick and keep going. But this time it was nice because we were able to experience some of the sit down table service, which, you know, we haven't got to do that a lot in the past. And we did the Coral Reef, which I thought that was really amazing to get to see the fish swim by in Epcot. And my son loves animals, so he thought that was the greatest thing ever to see, you know, the fish while you ate. And the food was really great there as well. And we always do Cinderella's Castle at the Royal Table. We had a weird experience at dinner, so now we tend to do breakfast. And we like that you can get into the park early, so that's primarily why we do breakfast there. And of course, we never skip Be Our Guest. And what else did we do? We did a lot at Disney Springs. I hadn't been there in 3 years, so I got lost in Disney Springs, to be honest. We went there, and I'm like, yeah, where the heck am I at? I had to ask someone how to get to the marketplace because all these buildings had come up and parking garages and restaurants, and they were not there the last time I went there. So that was kind of that was a strange experience because I've never been lost anywhere in Disney. So
that was different. I feel bad because I went down for the Disney Springs media event when they really expanded it, you know, and really had us walk through and what, you know, like so we could share it on our social media and all that stuff. And we were down there just a few weeks ago and I was like, I can't find the polite pig. I know it's around here and I can smell it. Like I can't find it. And I'm like, this is so bad because they flew me down there to look around and share everything. Yet I can't even find a place to eat that I'm looking for. So yeah, it was weird because being lost like that at Disney Springs for just the 5 minutes that I was, I loved it because it was kind of new and exciting. I know everything so well that I was like, I like this idea of exploring and trying to find something. I love that.
It was definitely neat. And I really had no idea. I think we were going in circles because we were actually 40 minutes late for our dining reservations and they graciously still took us. When I explained, I had no idea where I was and I was walking in circles forever. We kept going by those newer shops that look kind of like, I don't even know, they kind of look like they belong in California almost, yes. But they were, we were just kept coming back to that section. I'm like, I think we've been here before. I don't know, but I feel like we've been here. And it took us forever to get over to the marketplace because we were eating at T-Rex. And finally, I don't know how we got over there after about 40 minutes just wandering in circles, but it was crazy. I think if I went down there, I would still get lost. It was so huge. It's so different. And it was definitely like a complete 360 of what it used to be. So that was really neat to get to look at all the different things. And of course, the kids are dragging me in different directions. What is this? This wasn't here. And I'm like, I don't know, but we don't have time. We've got dining reservations. So it was definitely something that was different because like you said, I'm so used to everything in Pandora. That was the first time we had seen Pandora as well. So that was neat to be able to go through there and experience something new like that as well.
So what did you think of T-Rex? Because that's a restaurant that I've never experienced myself. I've never done any of the Rainforest Cafes or anything like that. So is it a place you would return to? I know it's very loud and it's got the dinosaurs in it. So I'd love to eat dinner there with Ricky because she's petrified of them. But is it something that is worth the wait? Because I know there's a long wait sometimes. What'd you think?
Well, my kids love it. They absolutely love the dinosaurs in there. And the food is surprisingly not bad. I mean, it's obviously not, I wouldn't say like five-star restaurant food, but it's a, you know, your typical chain food and you're going for the experience and the atmosphere. And I definitely would go again. I know that's one of their favorites and they always choose that one above Rainforest. So I'm not sure if it's for the dinosaurs or if it's for the food, but like I said, the food's not bad. I don't think it's bad at all.
All right. So before we get out here, a few things to kind of wrap this up. Let's give some advice. You've been down there many times. You're traveling with the teen set, you know, the infant. What advice would you have if you've learned something over the years that maybe you haven't heard on a podcast or seen published on blogs and stuff like that? What advice would you throw out there for our listeners to make their next vacation a little bit better?
I would definitely say plan in advance. And then when you get down there, just, you know, leave reality at home and just kind of take it slow and take in everything. Because like you said, you blink your eyes and it is going to be gone and you're going to look back and think, well, what did we really do? So just really cherish every moment, especially if you have kids. Even if you don't have kids, just experience everything together as a family and just live the magic, really.
Yeah, I think the biggest advice I can give going along with what you just said is just really enjoy the people you're with, whether it's your significant other, your kids. A lot of folks go multi-generational. Grandparents are there, parents, kids all together. The attractions are awesome. The restaurants are great. You know, the character greetings are amazing. But what it really boils down to for me every time is the folks that I'm with. You know, I have a lot of friends that I consider family that I really only see at Walt Disney World because we're all over the country. And it's easier to go for us all to go to Walt Disney World than to go to Michigan or go to Pennsylvania or that kind of stuff. And it truly does. It's about the relationships and the people you're with because, you see a different side of people. You don't see them stressed out from work or with a deadline coming up normally. It's just, it's almost like we're all kids when we're there. And I love that about Walt Disney World.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It really is one of those places where life just kind of slows down for that week or however long you're there. And you just really get to enjoy it with the people you're with. And I think, like you said, that's the most important thing, just getting to enjoy it with the people. And the attractions and everything, like you said, are wonderful. But somehow when you have someone you love with you, it just makes it that much better.
Absolutely. All right. Here's the second thing. We had a show a couple weeks back where Pam and I threw out groups of three things down at Walt Disney World, and we had to cut one out forever. And I think I know how you're going to go with this group of three, but I want to see if I'm right on this one. But I have a pretty good idea. All right. So three attractions at Walt Disney World, the Magic Kingdom. You got Pirates, Carousel of Progress, or the TTA. This has been the most hotly contested one around our house, at least. So you have to get rid of one of those three things forever. Which one are you going to cut?
Oh, that's really hard. This is terrible. For my daughter's sake, she would say the Carousel of Progress because she just cannot stand that. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I like it. So she just doesn't like it for that reason. I don't know. Oh, goodness, this is hard. Definitely can't do Pirates because that's just a classic.
Yeah, I thought you would cut the TTA just because there's no soundtrack to it. You know, the other two have classic soundtracks.
I surprisingly love that for some reason. That's one of my favorite things. It's just relaxing just to get on it and just just take a moment to just kind of see everything from above. Ooh, I don't know.
Okay, I'll let you off the hook on that one. That's a tough one because I don't want to cut any of those three. I'm telling you, man, those three are like the heart and soul of the Magic Kingdom for me. That's why it's so tough. It starts family fights in this house because my wife she cut Carousel of Progress just no problem. I'm like, I don't even know you. I love the Carousel. Like the Carousel of Progress is so amazing. You just like she cut it without me even finishing the sentence. I'm like, who are you? We got to, you know, I don't know you. I thought I did, you know, 17 years. It's crazy.
I'm pretty sure that's the one that would go in my house too. Oof. I'm the only one who likes that. So I'd be outruled on that one.
Okay. So once again, as we get out of here today, let folks know about the book, the title of the book, where they can get the book, and where they can find you on social media.
Well, I am on Instagram I believe I'm still on Twitter. I don't use it very often, though. I'm also on Facebook. And I usually use Instagram the most, and it's Katie Fine Art, Katie with a Y. And the book is Walt Disney's Melody Makers, a biography of the Sherman Brothers, and it's available in both print and Kindle copies on Amazon.
All righty. Well, I'm going to be checking that out. And Katie, thanks so much for coming on the show, making our Monday that much better. And good luck with the book. Thanks for sitting down and putting pen to paper, because this stuff's important, and it's the soundtrack of the Disney fan's life. And it's kind of fun to hear the backstory and to get your perspective on it. So thanks again for coming on the show and sharing with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
All right. Don't forget, today's show is brought to you by our friends over at touringplans.com. They're going to keep you out of lines and see the most amount of attractions possible on that next Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Universal vacation. You know what? You can save up to 4 hours in line each day of your trip. So check them out today over at touringplans.com. And please support the show anytime you shop on Amazon. Even when you buy the book, you can do two things at once. You can use our Amazon affiliate link. It's brguestpodcast.com/Amazon. It really does help support the show. So anytime you shop on Amazon, again, please bookmark it on all your devices. brguestpodcast.com/Amazon. Give us a follow on the social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Be Our Guest Mike and at Be Our Guest Pod. And check out the Facebook page over at facebook.com/Be Our Guest Podcast. All right, we'll be back again on Wednesday with more of your listener questions. But until then, for Katie, I'm Mike, wishing you a great Monday. Time to head back to work, because it's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. And we'll see you real soon.
You've been listening to the Be Our Guest Walt Disney World Trip Planning Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or would like to be a guest on the show, please visit our website at brguestpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.